This is Metalix with your host, Belo.
And we turn to our promised guest. I promised him, but I didn't actually deliver on a graphic until, about an hour before you came in today. So my apologies for that, Mr. Stevie, but I think people can hear you now. Can you talk into the mic? Just make sure I got some level.
Yeah, hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me again.
The soft-spoken Stevie Boyser. And it's funny because if you've ever heard any of his music, he's the vocalist in your vocals in all four of your bands.
Yeah, all four of them. It's busy, but it's cool.
Okay, well, if you're going to be so very modest, which is totally fine, then you really just want to get up on that mic, you know, like,
yeah, definitely.
Like, just talk at this mic like you are straight up in an Ekapoise show, like, right now.
All right, cool. Yeah.
but less growling, though. I mean, we want to understand you.
All right, well, I can't promise there won't be any growling at all, but I'll see what I can do.
Well, Stevie is an expert in death metal vocals, obviously, as we just covered with his various projects, but let's start... Before I really have like a vocalist question for you, but let's start by introducing you to all of the Metalix fans and everyone in Adobe Howland listening throughout the world. You're here for Ekapoise, correct?
Yes. I am predominantly going to be talking about Ekapoise today. We just released an EP like last week or so called Birthing Homoculi, and it's been really cool. Last time I looked, we were like number two on Bandcamp for Tech Death, which has been really fun. And actually, like, all of the funds that we are able to get through this via Bandcamp or the shirts and stuff that we're about to have printed are all going to Jason Becker's foundation to help support him and his struggle with ALS, which it's been really cool to see people like donating the way that they have been for it, because that's how we announced the album. But I am also in another Colorado band called Tethys that is really fun, lots of heavy riffs, still got a whole lot of tech and stuff to it. Another band that some of you may have heard of called Dissonance and Design, which is a little more on the progressive end of the spectrum. And I recently joined another band that is, I guess, like post-black metal is the best way I can think of to describe it, called Ashen Horde. So, very busy with music at the moment, but it's been really fun, and it's been great to kind of see payoff for things for Ekapoise, especially since that band's less than a year old, and so far this year, we've written and recorded our EP. We've been able to, like, amass, like, a small following on social media that's very quickly booming, as well as getting signed to the Artisan Era alongside bands like In Fury and Infold Darkness and stuff like that.
So the another thing too about Birthing Homunculi, which you just mentioned, is it's a pay your own price. So you can sample it there at Bandcamp, but of course you're gonna want to buy it. You see that it's for a good cause. Are people like really opening up for this? Or
yeah, definitely. I haven't checked sales in a little while, but so far, to my knowledge, over the weekend even that we released it, we had already raised about $500
nice.
For Jason Becker's foundation. And there have been a few like really generous donations. Like, there have been a couple people like donating, pledging like $20-$25 for, you know, something that ultimately they could pay a penny for. But I think that since it's for a good cause too, it's causing a lot of people to kind of give a little more for it, which is really awesome to see. Nick is the guitar player, and songwriter, who's written just about everything said for the lyrics, and a couple solos and stuff for the album. It was kind of definitely his idea, but once he pitched it to me, I love it. And him and I have been talking about it, and we hope that it's something that can like really inspire a lot of other bands to do the same thing with philanthropy and kind of giving back with their music.
Can you tell me about Jason Becker? Like, who is he? Why did he inspire you guys?
So Jason Becker, I actually had never really heard of him until a couple years ago. My old guitar player from Vale of Noth, Vance, had like a Jason Becker shirt, and he was the one that kind of showed me some of his material. But he's a really amazing guitar player that like really blossomed in the late 90s. And he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease and no longer has the ability to like play his instrument. And it's like it's incredibly sad because he's such an amazing musician. And from what I've heard, he's a really awesome guy to be around. And he is still composing music and releasing things a little bit at a time. At least I've heard that he has done something like that. But I just find it inspiring because it's kind of like giving back to someone that has inspired the style and the phrasing and like the shreddy playing of so many guitar players. And I know that he's like a big inspiration to Nick too. So it's cool for us to be able to give back to someone who has inspired like generations of guitar players, especially like in the tech death scene.
Well, that's guitar players. Who are some of the vocalists who have inspired you?
Vocally, like I like a lot of different things. As far as metal goes, I would definitely say like my top three influences there would be, Trevor from the Black Dahlia Murder, obviously. Although from his viewpoint, it's a lot more lyrically. Like I like how you can tell he actually spends time like crafting lyrics and has a lot of really clever wordplay and stuff like that in their songs. Hernan Hermida from All Shall Perish is like another one, or Eddie, as a lot of people call him.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I've had the pleasure of meeting him a couple times, and he's a really great guy, and he's an absolute monster. James Lee, the old Origin vocalist, he was on all of their albums up until, I think, Antithesis was the last one he did vocals for. He was the first vocalist that I ever saw and was just like, rather than being inspired, I was just like, I should just quit because this guy is so far ahead of the game. Unfortunately, he's no longer in the band. But yeah, like they range from things like that. I really enjoy Tommy Rogers from Between the Buried and Me. Mm. He has a very wonderful and dynamic voice. But probably like my number one vocalist right now would be Michael Lessard from The Contortionist and Last Chance to Reason. He does an amazing job with like his vocal harmonies and how he stacks to build melody and stuff like that. And I find that incredibly inspiring. And I've started like focusing on clean singing and stuff. Probably not going to hear it anytime soon. But it's really cool.
Well, first of all, I think if you're not going to call him Eddie Hermida, if you're going to call him by his actual first name, then I think you really should. I think you should say it as ethnically as you possibly can. Hernan.
Yes, he is a total monster.
He is. He's also a monster stoner. If you ever saw that interview he did with Be Real of Cypress Hill and Smoke Box, that's hilarious.
So actually, one of the first times I ever saw them play was back in like 2008. And that was still when like Chris Story and Matt, their old drummer, were like in the lineup, who are both back in All Shall Perish again, which is wonderful. Like me and a few of my old bandmates in Calculating Genocide got to hang out with those dudes at the Marquee and just got like super blitzed, which was awesome.
But what I was going to lead into though is, as a death metal vocalist, like there's really a lot more that you have to consider that goes into the dynamics of that vocal style. Now, people who are outside of the metal scene, obviously, well, for one thing, they're probably not listening to Metal Lakes. Well, maybe they are because they're like, you know, our moms and stuff. But there's so many nuances that you don't think about, like in recording. How much dubbing do you think is okay for death metal before you think that you kind of lose the essence of your real guttural like voice when you record?
Oh man, honestly, I think that kind of varies person to person. I think that it really just depends on like the fullness of your voice. But for me, a really big thing is like live execution. So there that's one thing that I know for sure I pay attention to, is I'm sure, like, you know, people that play instruments, whenever they go see something in a live setting, they kind of pay attention to how well people play parts and, like, how tight it sounds. So for me, like, I definitely layer some things and add harmonies in certain places. But whenever I track stuff, I like to do, like, whole sections of things at a time. I don't like punching because if it sounds too pristine, it kind of is a little, like, jarring or, like, offsetting. And then also when you see it in that live setting, unless someone can deliver, like, 110% with every single line, it's kind of, like, a little disappointing. So I think it's one of those things that, like, you know, like I said, it'll vary person to person. But in a perfect world, like, I don't feel like you should need more than, like, a couple layers unless you're building into some kind of harmony. And that's kind of just, like, how I see things, or, you know, how I've done my recordings and stuff.
Well, it's really interesting. What you just mentioned has always been a super important thing to me. If you can't reproduce what you do on the CD in a live setting, then it's not as though I'm, like, such a snob about metal that I think you suck and I'm not going to listen to your band anymore. But you should be able, like, I don't want to, let me step back. I like music that I can hear on the CD and then go experience live, or at least as closely as possible. Am I going to knock bands for doing really experimental shit that you couldn't possibly pull off live? No, not especially when it works well. Between the Buried and Me is a great example of that. But so far, I haven't seen Between the Buried and Me do something I haven't heard them do too much on an album that they haven't somehow pulled off really fucking well live. So how, on, like, a scale to you, like, one thing versus the other, reproducibility live versus just awesome sounding on recording, which one is more important?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I guess I would.
Is it different from project to project?
I think it kind of does, because there are some things that, you know, like, there are some things that will never manifest in a show, like certain projects and stuff like that, that are, people are just so far spread out that, like, the possibility of playing shows regularly isn't really something that's feasible unless they become, like, massive or have a huge following or some means to kind of, like, pay for everyone to come together as a collective and do things like that. That's a hard question.
We can come back to it if you want.
I think that, personally, I feel like as long as you're not enhancing your recording techniques, like, kind of like playing things half speed and then speeding them up and then marketing that product that way, I do feel that the recording piece is very important, because that's going to showcase your musicianship, your ability to write songs, you know, your ability to make this cohesive sound. But I do think that it's a huge plus, and it's also very reassuring as a fan of someone to be able to go see their live performance be on point. And obviously, like, you know, sometimes something might get lost in the mix, or they might not have, like, you know, some bands, you're gonna have an off night eventually.
Right.
But I feel like, at least for me, like, that live spectacle, I want to see as much of a show as I am, like, listening to their recording. Like, I want it to sound good, but I also really want that spectacle. And I know that sometimes, especially in a live setting, you're going to lose out a little bit on your sound by, like, moving around a lot, or, like, keeping people entertained, or,
right,
you know, adding or subtracting small things here and there.
Yeah. I mean, the best example that I always come up with for that, which is, like, come on, Brad, like, stay on the level here. These are metal musicians, not superheroes, right? But back in the day, when MTV was watchable and they had the video, I think it was the music video, the MVAs,
mm-hmm,
like, a long time ago, like in the 90s.
Yeah, late 90s.
Yeah, like, this was totally Lisa Left Eye time. Like,
yeah.
She was still around because Salt and Peppa and White Zombie both played this VMAs.
What?
And Salt and Peppa came out, and they, you know, they did their, like, I think they did Waterfalls at that particular one, and it was obviously lip-synced, you know, because they've got, like, a dance routine and all this shit, too. But that is not an important quality for that audience. Like, they care that you lip-sync well, but they don't really care that you're lip-syncing. Rob Zombie, on the other hand, comes out, they play more human than human, and he's out of breath, like, 30 seconds in. You know, he's kind of, even then, he was kind of an older dude. He's partied in his time. He probably doesn't have the greatest lung capacity in the world, and he's trying to run out, run around on stage, like, and get the crowd really riled up. Everyone's in seats, though, at the VMAs.
Yeah, that sounds seems like it'd be a challenge, you know? Like, a sit-down metal audience.
Right, right. So, it's kind of like you take the good with the bad, right? You take the fact that he can't really maintain his voice through an entire song if he's, like, running around all excitedly on stage. But you also take that it's a real performance and not synchronized dancing and lip syncing and shit like that, which is not important to me in metal.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I would agree with you 100% there. So it's sometimes it's a necessary sacrifice, you know, because like you said, like, you really want that spectacle, but you also want the music to be really well.
Really well put together. Well, speaking of music that is really well put together, the new Ekapoise, I believe we actually have enough time to listen to the whole thing tonight.
Excellent.
But what we're going to do is listen to it in two parts. So we'll listen to a couple tracks right now. We will go through it in order, but then we'll come back and we'll listen to the last three in the next little break. But this is Alchemic Web of Deceit and A Suit of My Flesh. In the past, when you've been on Metalix for Dissonance and Design, you have gone through every single aspect of the lyrics for all of these songs. I don't ask you to do that now unless you really want to. But what are we about to hear? What's this all about?
I mean, it's no surprise to, like, a lot of people that know me, but I am somewhat of a nerd. And so when Nick approached me with Ekapoise, we knew that we wanted it to have some kind of concept, and I pitched to him the idea of following an anime series called Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. And I showed him the series. He got super addicted and binge-watched both regular FMA and Brotherhood over the course of, like, 2 weeks or something, which is crazy because it's, like, over 100 episodes or somewhere right around there.
Wow.
And we came up with it. So this EP is about the antagonist of the series and kind of his genesis. And he is this character who is a homunculus called Father, who deceives the king of Xerxes into thinking he can gain immortality by sacrificing the lives of everyone in his nation. So they set this up, and unfortunately for the king of Xerxes, the dwarf in the flask, Homunculus, kind of sets things up in his favor and ends up gaining essentially like an unlimited source of power. He becomes a living philosopher's stone along with one other person. And so, yeah, this kind of just follows that. And then the second track, A Suit of My Flesh, is a lot of dialogue back and forth between the dwarf in the flask, Homunculus, and Hohenheim, his human counterpart, who is very conflicted with what just resolved. And he can actually like feel and hear like the souls of literally millions of people that are now trapped inside of his body that are the reason that he has this unlimited power and eternal life, essentially.
See, we wouldn't have brought you in, Stevie, if I thought that you might answer a question like that with, oh, you know, it's just a heavy song. Yeah. Shout out to Vino from Final Blow. Hear, hear. If you can't reproduce live what you've recorded, what's the point? He's tweeting at me at Metalix Denver on Twitter. You should tweet at me, especially if you know what a homunculus is. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yeah, homunculus. Yeah, that's
Do you even say the N?
I don't. I've never heard anyone pronounce it that way. It must be like a silent letter or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's turn that one out to the homunculi in the crowd tonight. Birthing Homunculi, the new Ekapois EP. You can get that on Bandcamp, correct?
Yes, it's on Bandcamp. It's Name Your Price. There's a donation, and once again, like, everything that we make from this, from the digital downloads, the shirts and CDs that we're going to have printed, go directly to the Jason Becker Foundation.
Ekapois, it is right now on Metalix. Here with Stevie from Ekapois, Tethys, Dissonance and Design, and Ashen Horde.
Yes.
Ashen Horde. Booyah. Memories really kicking in tonight. Ekapois on Metalade. Or less than 10 seconds. Belo with Stevie from the band you just heard, Ekapois on Metalix, I Dobie Howell. Or if you're listening to the podcast, you didn't hear the music. So sorry that I referenced it. But, you know, kind of not sorry, too, because you should have been listening to the live version or the replays on iDobie Radio. We should start doing replays on iDobie Howl as well. But that's you know, more effort for the Brad man. And, well, I'm here to just get fat and lazy on the metal scene. that's the name of the game here on Metal Lakes. No, not at all, actually. Very hard work. Speaking of a hard worker, Stevie from Ekapois in here with me in four bands and maintains a full-time job. Damn, dude. How do you do that?
You sacrifice sleep. Like, that is the answer to everything in life. Like, if you want to do more, just sleep less. You'll have more time. No, luckily, two of the bands that I'm in are projects that are kind of scattered. So Ekapois is actually one of them, and we have contact on a fairly regular basis. But I live in Colorado. You know, our bass player Hugo lives up north in Canada. Nick and Zach, our guitar players, both live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And our keyboardist, Jimmy Pitts, lives in St. Louis, Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. So we're pretty far spread out. But you know, through constant communication and the wonder that is the internet, we are able to kind of come together and like make sure these songs come into fruition, like the way that we envision.
Well, one thing that's cool to me, which I find I'm pretty amazed by this, actually, that Dissonance and Design is still playing music, like, right now.
Yeah, we are. So things kind of got sidetracked for us a little ways. Some people may or may not know. At one point, 3/5 of Dissonance was Veil of Noth. So there was a good 6 to 8 months there where we were kind of just focusing on Veil. We got to do this really killer tour with Vital Remains, and then came back and started working on the new album. Not too long after that was when I decided to step away from Veil, just for a few personal reasons. But now that I've like got everything resolved, like I'm back in the music scene more, and Dissonance is slowly working on writing. It's kind of a little bit of a slower process at the moment because while we're all back in Colorado again, we are still a little spread out. We all have very different schedules. But the music that Vance and Harry have been showing me is pretty phenomenal in my mind, and I'm very excited to have a chance to step in and like write my vocals for it and everything. I can't really tell you a whole lot about it, but it is going to be another concept album. It's going to stray pretty far away from the sci-fi kind of genre that Sentient was in. And it's going to be a little more emphatic and like a little more relatable, but there's still going to be a lot of interesting twists and turns as far as the lyrical content goes.
Well, if Dissonance and Design is not relatable, then I don't know what is. Also, I still feel like I haven't earned the ability to call him Harry. He's still Harrison for me, but that's awesome, like, that we're having you on because maybe we can get the crowd more into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually go back and forth. Like, sometimes I call him Harry and sometimes I call him Harrison, but that's how I am for a lot of people. Like, I mean, I switch a lot when it comes to things like that. But yeah, he's a great guy. He's a phenomenal guitar player, and I'm like really happy just to like have him in my life and like as a friend. Like he's an awesome guy.
So that's Stevie from Ekapois showing some love for his bandmate Harrison. Harrison. Definitely. And Dissonance in Design. But Stevie's here talking about Ekapoise, and he's in the band Tethys. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yep, Tethys.
T-H-Y-S.
Yep. So we actually, far before I joined, they were together, they kind of took hiatus for a couple years because their old vocalist, unfortunately, injured his throat and decided that he no longer wanted to continue that venture. I kind of was hanging out with the two guitar players from that, anyways. And Quinn and Corey, we would all hang out every week and just watch anime together. And after a while, we were just we're all already in the same place at the same time once a week anyways. We might as well do something musical, and kind of got things back up and going for that again, which has been really fun.
So it was hanging out with friends that turned into being in a band.
Yeah, definitely. So
that's
which
awesome.
Is wonderful. I feel like if you can't be friendly on some level with the musicians that you're working with, even if they live a great distance away and you just talk to each other online like we do with Ekapoise, I don't really see the point in being in a band if I'm not making something with people whose company I enjoy.
Yeah, dude, no, that's awesome. Do you ever think, though, on another level, that being in four different projects kind of means that you're taking opportunities away from other needier vocalists out there? vocalist union is going to have a word with you.
No, I don't know. Luckily, I haven't gotten a whole lot of hate mail or anything about it. I don't know. I've been very lucky in a lot of the bands that I've been able to play with. That the only band that I ever really truly auditioned for was Dissonance in Design. Every other band that I've been in, I've just kind of been contacted and people have been like, "Hey, we want to work with you. Here's our music. Let us know what you think about it." And that's how I started with Ekapoise. After the Veil of Noth Vital Remains tour that took place last year. Nick sent me an email and just wanted to know if I might be interested in doing vocals for a project that he was in. And I asked him, what genre. He told me it's tech death, and it was more on the melodic end of the spectrum rather than the brutal side. He told me that thus far he had him and one of his other friends and Hugo from Beyond Creation, who plays bass for them, was going to be playing bass for the project. And he sent me just a MIDI file. It was a MIDI track bounced out of Guitar Pro, and it was for Alchemic Web of Deceit, and it was before we had keys or anything like that, so it was just guitars, bass, and drums. And literally, I don't know, I got maybe 40 seconds into it before I was replying to him and was like, yes, I will definitely do this. I will make time for it. Just once you guys have stuff recorded, send it my way. And then, that started the friendship between myself and that group of people, and kind of all of those ideas.
Well, before we go on talking about all of the projects that you're in and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, I think I did promise a little bit of Pokemon Go talk.
Oh, dude, definitely.
Let's hear the rest of this Ekapoise EP. We're going to hear three tracks. Two of them are kind of interlude-ish, shorter tracks. So it's really should we hear this as one long thing?
No, definitely. Yeah, the last three movements for the album pretty much stream together one long track. And it is Birthing Homoculi. And the first movement is called Shrouded. The second is the full-blown, personally my favorite song on the EP, Sigil Insidious, which also features two solos from Christian Munzer, whose name I hope I'm not butchering, but you may know him and his work from Necrophagist and Ekapoise, as well as he's playing in this really killer power metal band called Eternity's End right now, and he released a solo album, it's definitely really cool, and the last piece of everything is called Reincarnated.
Well, I have been digging the power metal lately. Perhaps when we come back, too, we'll talk about opening your mind to other genres. Open your mind. to Ekipoise on Metalix. It is Ekipoise. That's the end of Birthing Homunculi. You can hear the EP at Bandcamp. If you're listening to the podcast and didn't hear the music, hey, sorry, you should have been listening to the show live or on replay. But you can still listen to Stevie and B-Lo anytime you want on the Metalix podcast. Or Monday nights, Idobe Howell, B-Lo with you, Monday from 9 to 11 Eastern, 7 to 9 Mountain Time, here in Denver. What a beautiful city we live in. Is it not a great metal scene here?
Dude, it's wonderful. Like, yeah, like even local shows here usually are like popping, which is really cool. And as far as like, I could say from like touring other places and stuff like that, even during the weekdays, like I'd say we have like more of a count than a lot of other cities, which is pretty killer.
Now here's another really cool aspect of Denver is we have a great public transportation system, or it's getting better. I shouldn't say it's not great. It's not the best, but it's getting better. And I totally got a light rail to Union Station, walked to Marquee the other night, and I must have passed about 10 pokey stops along the way.
Nice.
Yeah. You take the right route, man, and you can hit a bunch of them, but oh, yeah. You got to be willing to stop in the middle of the street or, you know, on the sidewalk and, like, stop and swipe real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of makes me freaked out.
I'm really fortunate. So, like, I live in Arvada, and, like, a 10-minute walk from where I live is this, like, little spot called Old Town Arvada. There's just, like, a bunch of mom-and-pop shops.
Yeah.
And there's probably, like, 15 or 20 Pokestops, like, in that little couple-block period. And, I mean, people drop lures on things all day. So you can go there pretty much at any point, like, get tons of items by walking around in circles, really, and encounter a whole lot of things. Like, yeah, it's really cool. Like, I love going to that spot.
Is there some benefit to using lures instead of incense?
So I think like the main benefit is going to be like if you are going to be stationary in like one spot, you can use a lure and it'll attract things not only for you, but like any other player that is around will be able to reap those same benefits. So like if you're playing in like a group or something like that kind of setting, you can do that. And then you can alternate like who uses lures. So you get like more time, you get more attraction, and it'll cost like each person like a little less of their own inventory. Hmm. Whereas like the incense is just for a singular player.
Yeah, I tried this like scheme, for lack of a better word. It's not like it's not a illegitimate thing. In fact, it's quite legit. If you save up your lucky eggs, you wait to evolve all your Pokemon until you spend an egg, and then like my strategy was going to be burn down an incense, and then the Pokemon would come to me. But it didn't really work out that way because I don't live near any Pokestops. And so I think I like had about three like wander up to me at some point for, I don't know, the last 20 minutes or so of that lucky egg. It kind of felt like a waste, but I went from 12 to 13, like gained a full level.
Nice.
No problem.
Yeah, my brother Jake actually told me about that, and like I get a lot of my Pokemon Go information from him because he like is just like always updating me with things of like, dude, let's go to this place and stuff. Like right now, like I have a Dragonite because, well, that one was a little different, but like I bumped into this guy in Old Town Arvada that had like more than one, and I was just like, dude, what the heck? Like, how do you have these? You need so many candy to make them, and unfortunately, there's no longer a nest there, but he told me, like, yeah, dude, just go up to Utah Park and you can catch a bunch. So my brother and I went up there, and the first day that we were there, we were only there for, like, 2 hours, and he caught more than me, but I caught, like, 15 or 16. And then we went back a second day, and then I found a couple at, like, a park that was closer to me, and that's, like, how I ended up with a Dragonite. But, yeah, like, I get – one thing that I really love about this game is that since – like Niantic and Nintendo have been releasing so little information about things, it's really causing like the community to like kind of come together and like work together to get to things, which is really cool. Cause then, you know, you're making new friends in real life, going places, playing games rather than just, you know, sitting like at your own house and talking to people like online.
Sure. I would say that I have already begun the descent into probably not playing the game anymore soon, but because I'm way behind the hardcore players, so I'm only like level 13 or whatever, and everyone I see who's at a gym is like 2019, whatever. They have hardcore Pokemon like Dragonite, which you can't really get as easily anymore.
Yeah,
they changed up what spawns at Utah Park, which that was like all over Reddit. There's a Denver Pokemon Go subreddit that's pretty useful, actually. It tells you a lot of interesting places, but I didn't know about Old Town Arvada. Here, closer to here, there's O'Brien Park, and Parker is supposed to be pretty Pokestop rich, but also South Glen Mall, and then DU Campus.
Are you talking about the one on Spear, like downtown, like that?
No, that's Metro and CU Denver, what you're talking about. And I did see, like, as I rode by on the light rail, I kind of zoomed out and I saw, like, all the stops.
Yeah,
there.
Dude,
that's
nuts. It's crazy. My buddy Mikey from Allegiant, like, screenshot his phone one day and, like, posted it on Facebook and was just like, I don't even know where to begin. There are so many spots there. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
But I mean, hey, it's getting people to go to school, I guess, kind of.
Yeah. At least getting people out of the house, right?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Stevie from Ekapoise, thank you so much for being in studio tonight. You can get the new Ekapoise EP, Birthing Homunculi, on Bandcamp. It is Name Your Price, but it is actually a, I want to call that fundraiser, but that's not the term that I'm thinking of.
We're just doing donations for Jason Becker's foundation, yeah.
Is that the name, the Jason Becker Foundation?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so they are donating all of the money to the Jason Becker Foundation. He has ALS, and he's an amazing guitar player, so support them. Meanwhile, if you want to come out and say what's up to Stevie, maybe you want to talk more Pokemon with him or some other such nerdy things, which Stevie has been more than accommodating with that conversation, check out Tethys. That's Friday at the Gothic.
Yes, we are headlining a show at the Gothic Theater on Friday, and we've actually got a couple. We're going to be playing the whole EP that we are working on right now, as well as a couple of new songs, and we just got some new merch and stuff printed, too. So,
all right. Well, Stevie's also in Dissonance by Design and Ashes. Oh, my God.
Ashen Horde. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, man. I was so close, but how many times do people ever come in here who are in four bands? Anyhow, Stevie, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to high-five you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And since we're talking about Tethys, I will leave you with a Tethys song. As always, Metalix Monday nights, 9 to 11 o'clock Eastern time. Thank you for your time, Stevie.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tethys Copernican Cataclysm. I had to get my voice evil. On Metalix, the loudest show on the planet, Idobia Owl.